Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, since it's that time of year, we'll talk a little bit about Halloween. Why not, right? And an essay by Pam Lanham of The Doings, entitled Peanuts Halloween Classic is Really a Story of Faith. She starts out with Albert Einstein's quotation, "Insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results." Well, I wonder what Einstein would have thought of Charlie Brown and Linus. In It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, both characters do exactly what Einstein defines as insanity. Charlie Brown, for the umpteenth time, believes Lucy will hold the football in place. After all, she's brought a signed document indicating she will. "This year, I'm really going to kick that football," he says, just before Lucy pulls the ball out from under him and he ends up flat on his back again. Linus believes the great pumpkin will rise out of the pumpkin patch Halloween night. After all, he chose the most sincere pumpkin patch he could find. "You can look all around and there's not a sign of hypocrisy," he tells Sally, who's decided to wait with him. Of course, the only thing that rises out of the pumpkin patch is Snoopy, much to Sally's dismay. "Halloween is over and I missed it," she wails. "You blockhead. You kept me up waiting for the great pumpkin all night, and all that came was a beagle." But Linus isn't discouraged. He spent every Halloween waiting for the great pumpkin, just as Charlie Brown has tried every time Lucy pulls out a football to kick it. Einstein might call them crazy. I prefer to think that maybe they have faith. Faith isn't always a very popular thing to have, especially if you hang around people who like to quote Einstein. But most of the things worth having faith in can't be seen, smelled, heard, tasted, or touched. And many times, having faith leads to disappointment. But then again, that's the whole point. Faith is believing in something when common sense tells you not to, Doris Walker tells her daughter, Susan, in another wonderful holiday classic, Miracle on 34th Street. Susan, who's awfully smart for her age, quickly compares her mother's advice to the old and often unpopular adage, "If at first you don't succeed, try, try again." But that's what faith is all about. Not succeeding, but believing. Faith certainly can be misapplied, and it is. People do a lot of stupid things under the guise of faith. They get behind the wheel after too many cocktails and say they have faith they will get home safely. They say they have faith in God or a higher power who will help them reach a certain goal and then sit and wait, doing nothing to help themselves. They spend hundreds of dollars on lottery tickets and say they have faith this will be the week they win. But Linus has faith in something kind and generous and sincere. And he has the best kind of faith, the kind that stands up to mockery and sacrifice. He's willing to let his friends laugh at him and insult him. He's willing to give up trick-or-treating and Violet's Halloween party. He has faith, even though he has nothing tangible with which to justify it. "When are you going to stop believing in something that isn't true?" Charlie Brown asks him. He doesn't reply, but we know the answer. Never. He has faith. And that's what makes the story so wonderful. Very interesting essay. "Faith is believing in something when common sense tells you not to," says Doris Walker in Miracle on 34th Street. Very true. And we have faith this is going to be a safe Halloween. I hope it is. I certainly hope it's going to be a safe Halloween. And certainly a couple frightfully fun factoids about Halloween. The best place for trick-or-treating in America, Bridgeport, Stamford, Norwalk, Connecticut, according to a 2012 index of Halloween halls. A quarter of all U.S. candy sales each year occur around Halloween. This year's top seller? Snickers. Now, I thought it would be Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, but it's Snickers. Maybe the little ones. That's what makes it so easy to throw into somebody's bag. The 1978 thriller Halloween, shot on a budget of $300,000, went on to become one of the highest-grossing indie films ever. And you can see it for 24 hours straight at some cable station this weekend. Ron Wallace of Green, Rhode Island, has just grown the largest pumpkin in history. On September 28th, the giant gourd weighed in at 2,009 pounds. A ton of pumpkin. And finally, Harry Houdini, the famous magician and escape artist, died on October 31st, almost 100 years ago. Interesting, huh? Harry Houdini, right? Well, last week we had the opportunity of having Lanny Hall Alpert on our show. And, of course, she was the lead vocalist for Sergio Mendes in Brazil 66 for many years. So we want to continue some of her music. We didn't get a chance to play much of it last week. A song written by Alan and Merlin Bergman, the Academy Award winners, who we had on our show not too long ago. One of the classics, Like a Lover. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Like a lover, the morning sun slowly rises and kisses you awake. Your smile is soft and drowsy as you let it play upon your face. Oh, how I dream I might be like the morning sun to you.
I might be like the morning sun to you.
Like a lover, the river wind sighs and ripples its fingers through your hair. Upon your cheek it lingers, never having known a sweeter place. Oh, how I dream I might be like the river wind to you.
I might be like the river wind to you.
How I envy a cup that knows your lips. Let it be me, my love, and a table that feels your fingertips. Let it be me. Without you, like a lover, the velvet moon shares your pillow and watches while you sleep. Its light arrives on tiptoe, gently taking you in its embrace. Oh, how I dream I might be like the velvet moon to you.
I might be like the velvet.
Tip-toe, gently taking you.
Lonnie Hall, Sergio Mendes in Brazil, 66, Like a Lover. And we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Love, loss, and the ultimate sacrifice. Be a part of Paramount Theater's remarkable, emotionally charged staging of Miss Saigon, one of the most epic productions of modern musical theater. Directed by Paramount Theater Artistic Director Jim Cordy, Miss Saigon is the second installment in the Paramount's Better Than Broadway 2013-2014 Broadway series. Performances are through November 24th, 2013 at the Paramount Theater, 23 East Galena Boulevard in downtown Aurora. From the creators of Les Miserables, Miss Saigon is the riveting story of an American soldier that has fallen in love with a Vietnamese bar girl as the fall of Saigon is looming. Following a quick wedding and an evening of passion, the GI is forced to evacuate, pledging to return for his new bride. Years later, he learns his love escaped the country with their son he never knew, beginning a quest that will change everyone. Miss Saigon is an experience filled with brilliant imagery, rich orchestrations, unforgettable lyrics, and a story that will stir your heart. Director Jim Cordy explains, Paramount is about producing large-scale shows in a way Chicago audiences haven't seen them before, while still remaining ever true to the author's intentions. As it alludes to Madame Butterfly, Miss Saigon is based on real lives and inspired by documentary photographs of the Vietnam War. This is simply an idea from where we are taking off. Paramount audiences can look forward to a very physical production that integrates compelling documentary imagery with the heat and color of live performance. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star of stage, screen, and television, marketing director, nationally recognized leader in the world of community theater, star of The Oprah Winfrey Show, improvisational comedian, former executive director of the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, one of the nicest people in the world of Chicago theater, now the vice president for marketing and sales of Aurora's Paramount Theater and the new River Edge Park venue, now presenting the 2013-24 season, our good pal, Mr. Jim Jarvis. Jimmy, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Kevin Moore, I love talking to you for a variety of reasons, including you give the best intros of anybody I know. And I know that took up our whole interview, you just doing my intro. So thanks for having me on, and we'll see you again.
Always a pleasure.
You're awesome, man.
I got a lot to work with, though. You've done pretty much everything.
Well, I've been lucky. Things have been really cool. And even over the years, getting to be friends with people like you, it's been a really kind of fun, different career for couple guys, you too, from the south side.
Right? Sure, that's right. But I have to start up by asking, how's my buddy Will doing?
Will is absolutely cool, and in fact, he is dressing up on Halloween and going as a biker. I originally started as him going as Keith Richards, and then we thought that may be a little inappropriate, and we didn't want the DCFS at our doorstep. So since he and I ride Harleys together, he went in biker gear today, but he's absolutely cool. And his younger brother, Sam, is going as Elvis Presley. He's one now, so he's going as Elvis Presley in his later years with the weight gain and
Well, he's a big brother, so he must be enjoying that.
Yeah, so they're finally getting along after, you know, his first year. I always tell people, Will no longer wants to stick Sam in a microwave, so that's good. We're making headway there.
Yeah. As long as he's a White Sox fan, that's the important thing.
Well, yeah, there's no other place. There's no other colors. Blue and red don't even exist in our color scheme at all.
Well, again, congratulations, and here you have another hit to Miss Saigon on your hands.
I got to tell you that we did our first preview on Wednesday night and Wednesday afternoon. And number one, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Number two, amazing ovations, standing ovations afterwards. I mean, this will be our 10th show in our Broadway series production over the last couple of years. And I got to tell you, Kevin, you and I have been doing this a long time. So, you know, become a little jaded and you really, you know, distance yourself from some things. And I've got to tell you, this is an amazing, epic production. Personally, I think it's the best production we've produced, bar none. Truly, it's that powerful of a show.
Yeah, Jay Kelly's been telling me about it. I have to get out and see it. But, you know, for people who aren't familiar, haven't been had the opportunity being out at Paramount Theater, thinking of all the great shows you and Tim Rader and Jim Cordy have put on, My Fair Lady and Joseph and A Chorus Line and Hair and Grease and Annie, The Music Man, Fiddler on the Roof, started this year with In the Heights and now Miss Saigon. It's quite an accomplishment.
I got to tell you that, you know, it is. It's amazing. And it all started with the boss, Tim Rader, when he wanted to produce his own shows. You know, the whole impetus was for years we would have these touring Broadway shows, but we would never get the A or B lists of tours. We get the C and D lists. And so Tim decided, hey, look, I want to do this. And he literally called Chris Jones and said, who would be a great artistic director to get? Chris Jones said Jim Cordy, but he'll never do it. He doesn't want a full-time job like that. Tim called him, brought him out. They looked at this beautiful 85-year-old theater. They started brainstorming. Cordy comes on board, and we went from zero subscribers a couple of years ago to over 20,000 subscribers right now. And the shows have been just absolutely amazing. We've learned a lot with each and every show. I think we've gotten better at it. I think there's different things that we do. Like we produce with a full orchestra. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, and you hear a full orchestra in that pit starting to play, you know, the overture when the curtain goes up, it just, every time I hear it, man, it gives me goosebumps.
It's amazing the subscriptions and subscribers that you have, and it keeps growing. And then you've had to expand the season.
We had, actually, yes. You know, we were initially started with 3 weeks, and now we're into 4 weeks. And quite candidly, we're probably going to go to either 5 or 6 weeks with next season. And, and next season's done, and unfortunately, I can't tell you what it is, but it's an amazing power-packed season. And yeah, it's been really, really great. And quite candidly, the response that we've been getting from audience members and emails and phone calls and you know, Facebook, all about Miss Saigon has just been phenomenal. So we're in a really good spot, boy. It's going to be an exciting run of the show.
In its place.
This Saturday, you know, we open Saturday night, November 2nd.
And it plays till about the 24th?
Yep, so it plays until November 24th. And, you know, it was funny. We were looking at some things today and looking at our ticket prices, and people are still asking us, how do you go about doing it? Because, you know, for a subscriber, the high-end package for us, you can see four amazing shows for $99. You know, on the low end of stuff, it's $71. Or you can come and buy an individual ticket to a Broadway show for $36. And you can't do that anywhere.
No.
The nice thing is, I think we've proven ourselves in the musical theater industry that, you know, we're here to play with the guys at Broadway in Chicago and Marriott and Drury Lane. And, you know, even like last year, Chris Jones and Hetty both said stuff like Annie and Fiddler on the Roof were better than the stuff that they'd been seeing on Broadway. So.
Your kickoff, My Fair Lady, had to be the best My Fair Lady I've ever seen.
Yeah, you were there. I mean, it was, you know, everything about it was just so powerful, and the sets and the costumes, and it's interesting. Even now, you know, we're very fortunate because our reputation in the industry is gotten out. And so, for instance, you know, the woman who is playing Kim in Miss Saigon literally is from Korea. Like, she is the first Korean actress to get her equity card in Chicago.
Wow.
But she found us, and we had actors from around the country when we were launching this came to us and said, hey, we want to come in, we want to audition. And so it's helped just with the level of talent pool that we have anymore and stuff.
Well, Anthony Joseph Randa, wasn't he in the original Broadway or touring production of Miss Saigon?
Yes, he was in tour number one and tour number two.
Okay.
And he's played it all over the place, and that guy's so amazing. And you know what? I think a lot of people who either forget or haven't seen Miss Saigon yet don't realize it's an opera, basically.
Right,
there's no
right.
speaking. And so, you know, like, I was amazed when he was doing a number the other night. I'll bet you it was an 8-minute long number. And, you know, then he goes off and he gets ready for the next one on stuff. And I'm like, these people are just phenomenal. Their voices and the acting and everything that goes with it. It's really, really awesome.
And following up Miss Saigon, of course, is one of the classics, 42nd Street.
Right, yeah. So then we go into 42nd Street, January 15th, and it goes through February 9th. And, you know, it's funny. It was kind of a little bit of a different season for us this year, that In the Heights, that was the first time it was produced outside of Broadway and Chicago tour that came in. And that was great, and it was a totally different show than anything we would normally do on stuff. And then we, you know, we went to a powerful thing like Miss Saigon. And then, you know, 42nd Street's just that quintessential show. It's got, I think, the largest tap number in Broadway history. It's the opening number to that whole thing on stuff.
Sure.
So, Kevin,
sure.
And I know you enjoy taps.
Absolutely.
So you want to get your tap shoes out.
I'm usually tap dancing around something, let me tell you. Rachel Rockwell directs it.
Yep, Rachel's directing that one. You know, Rachel's just a rock star
in
Chicago when it comes to it. We're very fortunate to have her as part of our family here on stuff. And then when we're done with that for the season, you know, we're going to wrap it up this year with Rent. And so and Jim Cordy comes back to direct that whole thing. And so, you know, it's just really been a powerful, wonderful year for us. And So far, we've been very lucky about the talent we're getting, and the people are responding well. We're getting a whole new audience of individuals that are coming in from all over the place to see stuff like Miss Saigon, and rent selling really well this far out because that site has such a strong following as well. So it's been good, man.
Well, you got some stuff coming up for the holiday season. I don't want to forget that. And, of course, Garrison Keillor's are going to be here in a few weeks.
Yeah, that's wild. Garrison Keillor. So, you know, everybody knows him from A Prairie Home Companion. That thing's been running for, like, four decades. And Garrison's awesome. You know, he's the storyteller, the quintessential storyteller. So he's coming in, and he's telling his stories and probably reading a little bit of his poetry and people love him, and ticket sales are going great for him. So, you know, we're excited to have him in there. Then Second City is coming into town with us again. We did that last year, and, you know, we have another theater besides the Paramount. It's called the Copley Theater. Mm-hmm. It's 216 seats, very intimate. It's a perfect place for something like this for Second City. And so it's called the Second City's Nutcrackling Holiday Review, and that's with us from December 6th through the 22nd. We have a really cool show called Christmas with the Celts. That's on December 18th, and it's all this beautiful Irish music and dancing and stories, and that will be really cool. We bring in a Christmas carol this year. We're doing that for a couple of days, so it's, you know, a great family tradition for people out here in the western suburbs to come here to see that. You know, we try to spice it up a little bit as well, and so there's this wonderful holiday show, and it's called Ballet Folklorical, and it's all this wonderful music and dancing and costumes and the Hispanic heritage. And so we have that in December as well on the 6th. And Mannheim Steamroller, do you know those guys?
Oh, absolutely. With Chip Davis, are you kidding? That's great. They're great.
And you know what's funny is, and they're phenomenal, and, you know, they really are. I think they still have the largest selling holiday albums of all their albums combined of any other artist. But when I started doing research on Chip Davis, I never realized Chip Davis wrote the song Convoy.
Really?
Yeah, it was a song, and then they made that movie out of it.
Sure, right.
And I'm like, the Convoy still sticks in the back of my head on stuff. I hope they do a shout-out to Convoy sometime that night. But that'll be a really cool show. And then we have a guy named Bill Blogg, who's a wonderful illusionist, so we got some family stuff coming up at the end of December with Bill. And then, you know, it's funny, we're already, it's hard to believe we're talking about New Year's Eve already. But, you know, our New Year's Eve show this year, Tim went out, our boss, and he talked to the number one Elton John tribute artist in the country and said, hey, I'd like you to do a show for us. And so it's Craig doing Elton John and his partner, Donnie, who's a Broadway actor who looks and sounds just like Billy Joel, and they're coming together to do all the big hits of Elton John and Billy Joel on New Year's Eve. So it's going to be a really, really busy holiday.
Right? A great way to celebrate New Year's Eve. That's a wonderful idea.
It is. It's totally cool. And, you know, we're doing two shows. If you want to get out, you know, early and go do something else, we've got a 6 o'clock performance and then the 10 o'clock performance. We've got Champagne Toast and, you know, the Party Favors and a countdown. And so it'll be really just a lot of fun to do. And actually, we just added something a couple of weeks ago. So we are doing this cool wine tasting on December 13th. And what it is, though, is we're giving people who come to it full access to backstage.
Oh, that's nice.
So, you know, they're going to get to sit in the same couches that Sinatra and Tony Bennett, Liza Minnelli, you know, had sat in, and they get to wander through the orchestra pits and, you know, go have full access to backstage while they have wine and food and craft beer and all sorts of stuff. And we want to just kind of open it up because you and I always take stuff like that probably for granted after a while because that's our jobs and we're in the industry. But everybody wonders what it's like to be backstage, so we're doing something like that as well.
You know, you brought such success to the Metropolis, and you brought that success because you succeeded the Tim Rader, who was at Metropolis for many years. And then, of course, he left, and now you're with him again, the dynamic duo over at the Paramount Theater. Yet you still have that same energy and enthusiasm, Jimmy. You haven't lost that. And I think that is very evident in all the things that you do and the people that you work with all over there, because they all are unified in that common denominator.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm so lucky to come over here, and, you know, and Metropolis was a wonderful place, and this is this whole different level of an 1,800-seat theater, and really, I always go, look, that kind of energy and that commitment and passion starts at the top, and that's the boss, Tim, and every day he comes in, I don't know what he does. I don't know if he has, like, 9 espressos before he walks into the door. But the guy's always positive, and he's firing everybody up. And, you know this industry. Everybody works long, hard hours on it. And, it's not like we're working in movies and nobody's getting rich here. You're doing it for the passion and the love of what we're doing. And every single person, from the people who work in our box office to backstage to, the CEO, is all on the same page. And it's just an exciting, wonderful place to be a part of. It's really a nice home away from home.
And now with the new River Edge Park venue, it was a great success this summer.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it was such a different ball game going from, running an 1,800-seat venue to a 10,000-person outdoor venue. And in the long run, though, and every day we learn something different, And in fact, we also learned that automation's your best friend, and automation is your worst nightmare when it doesn't work. Because the very first show, we opened it up with Blues on the Fox, and the headliner that night was Dr. John. Gates opened at 6, and at 5:57, we lost all the computers. And we had to go back to the old days where it was honesty, where we had to take cash, or if you told us you already paid, we couldn't check that out. But you were at will call, we gave you tickets, and we got through the night. But it was a really, really good summer. We did about 100,000 people this summer.
Wow.
Which is absolutely wonderful.
Absolutely.
For the first time out. And we had some wonderful acts like, Peter Frampton and, Buddy Guy and B.B. King and Rick Nielsen and, Tracy Adkins. And in fact, Randy Travis, that was his last concert before he had all the heart problems.
Uh-huh.
He was at our place on a Saturday. I think Monday he was in the hospital. So we all worried at first it was something we did. And he ended up, good thing he was okay, but it was really great. So we're in the midst of, working on programming for that next year. We're in the midst of working on programming for, besides the Broadway series indoors for the Paramount. It's we're up and running and busy, and we're already looking into 15-16 for the Paramount Broadway series.
Well, I tried to get Christopher Cross, but evidently he was too busy. I wanted to chat with him when you had that group out there, but, it didn't work out. But nonetheless, it was a great success.
You know what's funny? When those guys were here, the amount of people that were waiting outside the venue to get in, and they came early. Soundcheck was like 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And there must have been, I guess, a couple hundred people outside.
Really?
And everybody literally was just sitting there, and it was I would hope, a throwback to Woodstock. Everyone's hanging out, and they're just singing to all the different songs that were going on stuff. It was a totally cool experience. And, they're my age. I'm 52, so I grew up on all that music, and it was fun to be, a part of all that stuff.
Well, it's always a delight chatting with you, my pal, and I'm glad to hear the enthusiasm in your voice, because I know you're very happy out there, and it shows with the great shows that that you and Tim have put on out there. And it's reflected in the great success that with 20,000 subscribers. That's remarable.
Yeah, and we got that, and I will say, Tim's even up the level. Last year, I think when the numbers were done, we were a little over a total 250,000 people through our door.
Wow.
And it's just, that kind of stuff is staggering, but it's exciting to be a part of, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger. And quite candidly, it's guys like you who help to promote us and help to promote everybody, Theater Wit or Apple, all the other theaters in Chicago and that go on, and the cabaret artists and all that stuff. So thank you, because you always play a part in our success and every theater's success.
Well, you're very welcome, and I'm glad. I'm honored to do it. I'm honored to do it, my pal. The Paramount Theater is the Center for Performing Arts, Entertainment, and Arts Education in Aurora, the second largest city in Illinois, named one of Chicago's top 10 attended theaters by the League of Chicago Theaters. The 1,888-seat Paramount Theater, located in the heart of downtown Aurora at 23 East Galena Boulevard, is nationally renowned for the quality and caliber of its presentations, superb acoustics, and historic beauty. Love, Loss, and the Ultimate Sacrifice. Be a part of Paramount Theater's remarkable, emotionally charged staging of Miss Saigon, one of the most epic productions of modern musical theater. Directed by Paramount Theater Artistic Director Jim Cordy, Miss Saigon is the second installment in the Paramount's Better Than Broadway 2013-2014 Broadway series. Performances are through November 24th at the Paramount Theater, 23 East Galena Boulevard in downtown Aurora. And on the line with us right now is the Director of Sales and Marketing for Aurora's Paramount Theater, the new River Edge Park venue, our good pal, Mr. Jim Jarvis. Jimmy, maybe a phone number, website, if people like to get some information?
You bet. Our phone number is area code 630-896-6666. And if you go to ParamountAurora.com, it'll take you to our website. We've got a list of every single show on there, all sorts of cool little interesting facts. you know, Jim Cordy does a video all the time about behind the scenes, what takes place, and so we did a big video interview with him about putting together Saigon, and, you know, we try to add as much as possible to give people an inside look into what we do, man.
Now, I want to make sure I'm the first one to tell the audience this, that for the Christmas holidays, you're going to be stepping into that improvisational Second City Review for Christmas when you're doing that at the Copley.
Well, I'm hoping to. Now, mind you, that can either be a good thing or that can be a career ender for all my career. It's been a little bit for stuff, although my old partner, Scott Woolman, keeps trying to get me to come back and us do a show together or two. So.
How is that ball mother? I haven't talked to him lately.
He is good. He had a movie produced.
Really?
Called The Mine, and so I went to the opening of that about 2 or 3 months ago, and then he just got hired to write a new movie.
Well, I would have talked about that on the radio, but he doesn't tell me anything.
Well, you know, he's kind of an introvert, and he likes to stay at home and just kind of wax his bald head and look himself in the mirror.
Is he doing something in Metropolis for the Christmas season?
Well, you know, they are doing his version of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, good.
And then...
That's a Jewish version of Christmas Carol, right?
Right, yeah, hello. And then he's also had a couple things done this year at Red Twist. He's writing a new play for him that I think opens up in January. And then he wrote an amazing show for the Artistic Home that ran this fall that everybody was heralding. So he's literally been on a roll as a playwright. Who would have known? I would have treated him nicer if I'd known he was going to be successful.
I wouldn't have. But please have him call me because I want to touch base with him, make sure we get the word out, whatever he's doing.
You got it.
My pal, are we going to get together before the holidays?
Well, I would love to. So if you do this, send me email me and send me a couple dates, and let's have lunch because I'm not too far from you. It can't
right.
be from your home being out here
That's
in Aurora,
right.
and I know where you live.
That's right. That's right. I would love that.
I would love to see you. It's been too long.
Tanya, tell her I said hello. Hug the boys for us, and always a pleasure, my pal.
All right. Thank you so much, Kevin.
God love you, my pal.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Jimmy Jarvis, the Vice President for Marketing and Sales of Aurora's Paramount Theater and the new River Edge Park venue, presenting the 2013-2014 season. Great theater left. Miss Saigon just starting, 42nd Street. Rent, directed by Jim Cordy. He and Tim Rader and their staff have done just a remarkable job out there. And if you have the opportunity, without a doubt, Broadway caliber productions and something you will very much enjoy. Out in Aurora, easy to get to, and take advantage of it because it's a great place. For information, 630-896-6666. Well, let's get back to Sergio Mendes in Brazil 66 featuring Lonnie Hall. Pretty World will hang a little sign that says Paradise, Population 2. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Why don't we take a little piece of summer sky, hang it on a tree? For that's a way to start to make a pretty world for you and for me. And for the sun we'll find a name. Oh, can't you see the many world of ours will be the prettiest thing? We can gather rain in the forest stream to hold our happy faces. Breeze will blow you a kiss or two. Take me in your arms and our little world will be the place of places. Sun that just says paradise, population two. I know together we can make a pretty world for me and for you. For you, it's what I'm longing to do, to do, to make a world with you. We'll be right back.
Sergio Mendes in Brazil 66 featuring Lonnie Hall. Pretty World will hang a little sign that says Paradise, Population 2. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. William Shakespeare was the most remarkable storyteller that the world has ever known. Homer told of adventure and men at war. Sophocles and Tolstoy told of tragedies and of people in trouble. Terence and Mark Twain told comic stories. Dickens told melodramatic ones. Plutarch told histories. And Hans Christian Andersen told fairy tales. But Shakespeare told every kind of story. Comedy, tragedy, history, melodrama, adventure, love stories, and fairy tales. And each of them so well that they have become immortal. In all the world of storytelling, his is the greatest name. Chicago Shakespeare Theater presents CPS Shakespeare, Othello, a citywide ensemble of 29 students and teachers from 11 Chicago public schools developing and staging a fully realized production of William Shakespeare's Othello on Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Courtyard stage. This innovative program exemplifies Chicago Shakespeare Theater's role as a partner in literacy with CPS. Working under the guidance of Director of Stage and Film Kirsten Kelly, the ensemble members are currently engaged in an intensive 5-week rehearsal process led by a team of theater professionals who include text coaches, designers, and a fight choreographer. The participants will use their personal perspectives to interpret Shakespeare's story of passion, jealousy, and the ultimate consequences of vengeance. Performance of CPS Shakespeare Othello, adapted and directed by Kirsten Kelly, will be presented in Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Courtyard Theater on Friday, November 1st at 4:30 and Saturday, November 2nd at 10:30. And on the line with us right now is the Director of Education and Communication for Chicago Shakespeare Theater. She's a nationally recognized and regarded leader in the field of arts education. Under her guidance, Chicago Shakespeare Theater's youth engagement initiatives have evolved into one of the most respected curriculum-integrated arts and education programs in the country. In 2012, her 20-year tenure as the chief architect and head administrator of Chicago Shakespeare Theater's transformational programs were honored by the Folger Library with the prestigious Shakespeare Stewart Award. And on the line with us right now is our good friend, Ms. Marilyn Halpin. Marilyn, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Kevin, thank you so much for the invitation.
Always a pleasure, and I'm so excited. Here we have another success with Othello.
We do. The first time that we have approached this play for this particular ensemble. So we've done tragedies, we've done comedies, but we haven't done anything quite so harrowing, I would say, as Othello.
Well, I bet you that attracted some of the kids to participate, wouldn't you say?
I think it certainly attracted some of the teachers. when the students said yes, I don't know that they yet knew what play we were doing, but the teachers, we talked to months and months ago about what their thoughts were about us doing Othello, since they're in the classrooms every day in this city, and they know how incendiary this play is and how it might impact or land upon students. So our very first step was to ask teachers what did they think about us approaching a script like this, and they were completely on board. So they were on board, and then they got their students on board.
Now, do the kids come from the theater programs in the various high schools, or do they come from the maybe just an English class or somebody who's taken a Shakespearean class in one of the high schools?
All of our teachers are English teachers. There is this year, there is two exceptions who are drama teachers. And in that case, those students came from the drama classes at those two schools. But typically, and you know, even this year, large majority of our teachers are English teachers who are approaching Shakespeare in the required curriculum. And in truth, most of the teachers whom we work with are English teachers at this theater as opposed to drama teachers, just because of where Shakespeare sits in the required curriculum.
Can you believe you've been doing this for 8 years? You've put on such great shows, Taming of the Shrew, Hamlet, Midsummer Night's Dream, Macbeth, Romeo and Juliet, just to name a few, and each one have been more successful than the last.
They are each successful and challenging and completely profound in their own unique ways. Part of that is the script and how it resonates with the students, but part of it is the students themselves and the challenges that they bring in and the gifts they bring in and the energy they bring in. And you know, it really is, even though we've done this program 8 years, it is in some ways new each year because the ensemble it transforms itself with new students and new teachers.
You've worked in the theater for many years, and you've had the challenges of dealing with actors and actresses and personalities and so forth. Now you put the adolescent personality in that whole mix there. Is that any more difficult than that?
Oh, I love that question. And I may have to plead the fifth. But I would say the challenges, I guess the challenges at their base are not different in that human beings tend to create obstacles when they're insecure and when they're scared and when they're unsure of themselves. And that's probably true whether one is an adult actor or one is an adolescent. That said, the challenges that are facing these students, many of them, in their day-to-day life eclipse anything that an adult actor is typically facing, from a really tough home life, neighborhood, gangs, homelessness. I mean, all of these real life issues confront some of our students, and they go, those challenges go with them to school, and they come with them to the theater.
Well, one of the attributes you have is everyone wants to be there, and they know there's going to be a difficulty in learning the whole process. But some of these kids come from some rough schools. I'm looking at Prosser, I'm looking at Juarez, and like you say, Curie, some tough neighborhoods and some difficult situations that they leave to come down to Chicago Shakespeare Theater to perform.
No, that's absolutely right. Some of the students say yes to their teachers really not knowing what they're saying yes to. It may be out of a loyalty or relationship to the teacher. It may be that they do have some glimmer of what this might mean. One of our students this year said yes because she had seen the Q Brothers Othello, the remix, and had fallen in love with our theater when she saw a play here. But the reality of a 5-week intensive rehearsal period where we meet every single Saturday all day long and Monday through Thursday, every day after school until 7 o'clock at night, and then in this final week of adding in lights and costumes and sound, we're here till 8 o'clock every night. So the reality hits in a different way, and I would be remiss to say, oh yeah, they want to be here, because the truth is sometimes in that 5-week process, they really question the commitment they've made. And who can blame them, right?
Sure, right. What kind of language am I speaking here?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but it's exciting, and you've seen this, and I think it's exciting for us as outsiders looking in at what's transforming here to see the accomplishments of these young people. Now, you've been doing this for 8 years, so I think to an extent you've seen this before, but for us to see it and watch the success that they see in themselves, and you've seen that transformation from the beginning of them starting this whole ordeal to the end, and the people applauding as they are coming on the stage for their final curtain call. That's remarkable.
It's huge, and this is a fully produced, fully designed show. So they are in the same costumes that our actors have worn on our stage, and they're working with professional lighting designer, professional sound designer, professional fight director. And so when all of those pieces come together and they are understanding and emotionally connecting to the words of Shakespeare, which they really, even if they've been great students, and many of them are struggling readers, so they've never achieved that mastery before of any complex text. When they hit it and actually have this achievement, there is this sense of, I can do anything. Now, the curtain call is one level of achievement. What those 8 years give us, though, is this overview or the longitudinal look at students. So one of the wonderful success stories is a young man who was in the program for 3 years from Julian High School on the South Side. Tough school.
Sure.
And he went on to UIC. He's now a senior at UIC and asked his professors for him to come back for credit to do an internship with us this year in CPS Shakespeare. So here we have this young man who's now interning with us, who went through the program himself. And really, it was truly life-changing for him. There is no question in his mind that he would not be where he is today were it not for this program. And so those years of time help us see what that longitudinal impact is as well.
And let's give him a little credit. Mr. Warren Baskin, correct?
That's the one.
And he was in Romeo and Juliet and Macbeth and Midsummer Night's Dream. Do you see other success stories where the kids want to pursue that in college and maybe even beyond?
Yes, we do. The we have a young woman who is a senior this year, and our director, Kirsten Kelly, who you so beautifully introduced at the beginning, is going to be working with Electra to help her think about what conservatory she wants to go to in acting.
Mm-hmm.
That said, one of the pitfalls, potential pitfalls, is that anyone would think, students included, most of all, that this program is meant to groom actors. It's almost the opposite. It's meant to groom kids in whatever they decide they want to do, and that self-confidence and that level of achievement that they feel through this program can carry them to, for example, the Army, so that, again, another longitudinal look into one of these students' lives. A couple of years ago, and I may have said this to you before, so please forgive me, but if your listeners haven't heard this incredible story, Lucy went into the Army after she graduated from high school, and she was back in Chicago visiting and just appeared in our theater at one afternoon. She was in full camouflage, and it took me a minute to even register who this young woman was.
Mm-hmm.
And we visited for a couple of hours, and as she left the front doors, she was already out, and then she looked back at me and came back and said, "This place is what made me brave."
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's not a...
Wow.
She will never go into theater, but she gleaned from this program exactly what we want students to glean.
Well, while your program might not prepare people for the role or the, I guess, vocation of acting, it certainly will prepare them for life.
That's our goal.
Yeah. It's got to be exciting, as I said before. But I'm going to tell you one thing here. Now, I saw a movie. Now, don't tell Barbara this, because she might throw something at me the next time I see her.
I promise. It's our secret.
I've seen this movie, Anonymous, and I'm kind of leaning towards the X-14 mentality here. I don't know.
I'm going to hang up on you right now, even though we're on air. And I know you'll forgive me all the time.
But it's kind of an interesting argument.
It's a terrible argument. That's a whole other discussion. I guess what Barbara would say, and what I would say too, is that finally, we don't care who wrote these beautiful things. They are here, and just as, oh my God, I will never be able to so eloquently say what you said at the beginning. listening. But they're here with us. They're part of our lives 400 years later. And if it was, you know, the Earl of Oxford versus Christopher Marlowe versus William Shakespeare, I think we just don't care who wrote them. We're just so blessed to have these plays.
Well, very well spoken. That's true. Now, there's another book out by Steve Berry. He's an author I'm having on my show a couple of weeks. And he wrote The King's Deception. It's all different angle. You got to look at that one, too, now, Marilyn. It's kind of interesting.
I haven't heard of it yet, and I've written down the name, and I will look into it.
The King's Deception by Steve Berry. He's a pretty prominent author, but it's
Thank
kind
you.
Of interesting. Kind of interesting. Always a pleasure. You're so well-spoken. So always enjoyable chatting with you. I really enjoy this. We should do this more often.
Let's do it more often. And again, as always, thank you for your understanding of this program, and thank you for your interest, because... yeah, we're very proud of it, and it's so great when it lands in the way it does with you. So thank you.
Any way I could get the word out, don't hesitate to ask. Chicago Shakespeare Theater is one of America's largest and most celebrated theaters, producing and presenting a year-round season encompassing more than 600 performances at its home on Navy Pier. Its productions are also featured around the globe at the world's most venerable theaters and festivals, including the Donmar Warehouse, Market Theater of Johannesburg, Royal Shakespeare Company, Edinburgh Festival Fringe, and Grahamstown National Arts Festival. Recipient of the Regional Theatre Tony Award, Chicago Shakespeare's work has been recognized with 3 of London's prestigious Laurence Olivier Awards and by the Chicago Theatre community with 70 Joseph Jefferson Awards for Artistic Excellence. Under the leadership of Artistic Director Barbara Gaines and Executive Director Chris Henderson, Chicago Shakespeare Theatre is dedicated to producing extraordinary productions of classics, new works, and family fare. To unlocking Shakespeare's work for educators and students, and to serving as Chicago's cultural ambassador through its World Stage Series, an initiative that brings the world's most exciting theatrical events to Chicago audiences and presents Chicago Shakespeare's work abroad. Chicago Shakespeare Theater presents CPS Shakespeare Othello, a citywide ensemble of 29 students and teachers from 11 Chicago public schools, high schools, develop and stage a fully realized production of William Shakespeare's Othello on CSC's Courtyard Stage. Performances of CPS Shakespeare Othello, adapted and directed by Kirsten Kelly, will be presented in Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Courtyard Theater on Friday, November 1st at 4:30 and Saturday, November 2nd at 10:30. And on the line with us right now is our very dear friend, Marilyn Halperin, who is the Director of Education and Communications for Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Marilyn, maybe a phone number, website, if people like to get some information?
I would love to give that. It is 312-595- 5600, and our website is chicagoshakes.com.
Always a pleasure, said my dear. Please give our best to Barbara and Chris, and I always look forward to chatting with you again.
Me too. Thank you so much, Kevin, and have a good day ahead.
You too. Thank you, dear.
Okay, bye.
Marilyn Halperin, the Director of Education and Communications for Chicago Shakespeare Theater. What a very special lady to do what she does and do it so very well. Touch the hearts of these young people who, in turn, touch the hearts of us as the audience members to come out to Chicago Shakespeare to see them in CPS Shakespeare Othello, Friday, November 1st at 4:30 and Saturday, November 2nd at 10:30. In Shakespeare's Theater's Courtyard Theater on Navy Pier for information, again, as Marilyn said, 312-595-5600. Well, let's talk about a few Halloween traditions. Jack-o'-lantern, the age-old practice of carrying home embers in a hollowed-out turnip, burns strong. In an Irish folktale, a man named Stingy Jack once escaped the devil with a turnip lantern. When the Irish came to America, Jack's turnip was exchanged for the more easily carved pumpkin, and Stingy Jack's name lives on. So that's why we have a jack-o'-lantern with the light inside. A black cat. Thought to be reincarnated beings since ancient times, black cats were considered familiars, which were riches in disguise in the Middle Ages, which led to a cruel practice of burning them. The witches, not the cats. Trick-or-treating. This comes from a medieval practice called souling, when children begged for cakes on All Souls' Day and recited prayers for the dead relatives of whomever gave them treats. What about a witch? The witch. Most ancient peoples, including the Egyptians, Greeks, and Romans, had myths and folklore about those capable of magic. As Christianity spread, witchcraft got a bad name and was linked to devil worship. And the witch hat. Some experts say the pointy hat was just the style worn by peasant women. those often accused of witchcraft in 16th century Europe. For millions today, the Wicked Witch of the West headgear has been confirmed as scary witch wear, which segues into some of our guests for next week's show, which will be Wicked in Chicago, right? So something to look forward to. Well, that about does it for our show today. Thank you for sharing this last hour with me, and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank our guest, our good pal Jim Jarvis, the Vice President for Marketing Sales of Aurora's Paramount Theater and the new River Edge Park venue, now presenting their 2013-2014 season. And, of course, Miss Saigon, which is playing right now, upcoming 42nd Street, and Rent, and all the great shows in and around Christmas. For information, 630-896-6666. Always a pleasure to have my good pal Jim Jarvis on the show. And Marilyn Halperin, the Director of Education and Communications for the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, now presenting Chicago Public School Shakespeare, Othello, Friday, November 1st at 4:30, and Saturday, November 2nd at 10:30 in Shakespeare Theater's Courtyard Theater on Navy Pier. For information, 312-595-5600. Always a pleasure to chat with Marilyn, a very well-spoken woman, certainly very proud of everything that goes on at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Finally, a famous writer once said, "One ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words." I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, "And in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make." Have a great day.
I know the way. Now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. Yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music. The music.